Today's broadcast was originally recorded on March 25th, 2025.
Did you know that the president's Middle East advisor was in Moscow on this thread while you were, as director of the CIA, participating in this thread? Were you aware of that?
Excellent question, Senator. We'll see how he responds.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A., elsewhere in California in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN, up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW, Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. All right, we will get to that Senate Intelligence Committee hearing momentarily that you heard at the top there in a moment with both the answer to that question from Congressman
Senator Michael Bennett
of Colorado, and the answer from the Trump's brand new CIA director, John Ratcliffe. And we will have some thoughts on why both Ratcliffe and Trump's entire national security team should now, as she charges, resign in disgrace, with my guest joining us momentarily, the great Marcy Wheeler, on all of this. Also, Desi Doyen. Hi, Des.
Hi.
She will have our latest Green News report a little bit later this hour, as Trump is also preparing to screw up in response to major natural disasters.
Just what we all really needed right now.
Well, at least he's prepared for something. And the fossil fuel industry, who funded both Donald Trump and most Republican members of Congress, well, they are now preparing to ask for their very big favor in return. That's a little bit later this hour. But first, NPR has a nice little scoop today. A Pentagon-wide advisory went out 1 week ago warning against the use of the encrypted, commercially available mobile messaging app called Signal, even for unclassified information. Quote, a vulnerability has been identified in the Signal Messenger application. That's how the department-wide email begins, dated March 18 and obtained by NPR. The memo continues, quote, Russian professional hacking groups are employing the linked devices features to spy on encrypted conversations.
Oh, my.
It notes that Google has identified Russian hacking groups who are, quote, targeting Signal Messenger to spy on persons of interest. The Pentagon memo adds, quote, please note, third-party messaging apps, for example, Signal, are permitted by policy for unclassified accountability recall exercises, but are not approved to process or store non-public unclassified information. In other words, even if the information is unclassified, if it is not public information, the Signal app should not be used to store it, to share it, to keep it, to transmit it, given the vulnerabilities in the app that the Pentagon identified and notified all employees about 1 week ago. In the military, NPR notes, sending classified data over insecure channels is called slippage when it's considered minor, but even that can be a career ender for a military official. Moreover, at least as far back as 2023, a DOD memo, also seen by NPR, prohibited the use of mobile applications for even, quote, controlled unclassified information, which is many degrees less important than information about, say, an ongoing military operation in Yemen. There is almost no precedent, NPR reports, for the heads of defense, state, intelligence, and national security to be sharing such sensitive military intelligence in a forum that is known to be unsecured. And yet, as I suspect you have already heard today, unless you're a Fox News viewer, where they have reportedly been working very hard to either downplay or simply ignore this story entirely over the past 24 hours or so, the Signal app on a mobile phone is what Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth and other top Trump administration national security officials used to discuss bombing Houthi sites in Yemen earlier this month. That might have been bad enough, but worse, the editor-in-chief of The Atlantic magazine, Jeffrey Goldberg, was seemingly accidentally added to the group text chat discussing the plans for and the actual attack of these specific sites in Yemen. Among those included in the group chat with Goldberg and Trump's Secretary of Defense were accounts for Michael Waltz, that's Trump's national security advisor, J.D. Vance, the vice president, Trump's Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, Trump's Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, Trump's Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, Trump's CIA Director, John Ratcliffe, Trump's Deputy White House Chief of Staff, Stephen Miller, Trump's White House Chief of Staff, Susie Wiles, and Trump's Special Envoy to the Middle East, Steve Witkoff. According to Goldberg's blockbuster report on Monday at The Atlantic, the plans that he was texted via the app, quote, included precise information about weapons packages, targets, and timing. Though Goldberg, with apparently more knowledge of critical classified information, particularly of ongoing military operations, said that he would not quote from certain parts of the text chain in his reporting, noting, quote, the information contained in them, if they had been read by an adversary of the United States, could conceivably have been used to harm American military and intelligence personnel. But Goldberg added, quote, what I will say, in order to illustrate the shocking recklessness of this Signal conversation, is that the Hegseth post contained operational details of forthcoming strikes on Yemen, including information about targets, weapons the U.S. would be deploying, and attack sequencing. Just remarkable. After the bombing in Yemen began right on schedule, as discussed in this Signal chat group, Goldberg concluded that the group was, quote, almost certainly real and not just an attempt, that he was concerned it might be just an attempt to entrap him into some sort of embarrassing report in order to discredit him. He realized, no, this was real. When he was in the parking lot of a grocery store and saw that, in fact, bombs were being dropped on Yemen at exactly when it was, they discussed them in this group chat. Quote, having come to this realization, Goldberg reports, one that seemed nearly impossible only hours before, I removed myself from the Signal group, understanding that this would trigger an automatic notification to the group's creator, Michael Waltz, Trump's national security advisor, who had initially contacted Goldberg via Signal and invited him into this group chat that he had then left. No one in the chat had seemed to notice that I was there, writes Goldberg, and I received no subsequent questions about why I left or, more to the point, who I was. Despite avoiding the reporting of specific classified operational security information among the almost certainly classified information that was disclosed in this group chat, national security journalist Marcy Wheeler, in her initial coverage of Goldberg's report tried to make it, quote, easier to understand the risk of all of this by pulling out the, quote, kinds of highly classified information that these people shared with a journalist, including the name of a CIA official, operational details of the strikes on Yemen about to start, and the immediate results of that operation. When confronted on the tarmac of an airport in Hawaii on Monday about this, after Goldberg's blockbuster report was published by The Atlantic, Trump Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth attempted to pretty much deny all of it and just attacked Goldberg instead.
You're talking about a deceitful and highly discredited so-called journalist who's made a profession of peddling hoaxes time and time again. So this is a guy that peddles in garbage.
Why were those details shared on Signal, and how did you learn that a journalist was privy to the targets, the types of weapons used?
I've heard I was characterized. Nobody was texting war plans, and that's all I have to say about that.
Nobody was texting war plans, says Hegseth, after describing Jeffrey Goldberg as a deceitful and highly discredited so-called journalist who made a profession of peddling hoaxes time and time again. A guy who peddles in garbage, says the defense secretary. Nobody texted war plans, he said, even though by the time he made that claim to that reporter, as a reporter pointed out to him, the White House had already confirmed the authenticity of that group chat. Hegseth ignored the follow-up questions about that from the reporter.
Of course he did.
In the meantime, back at the White House on Monday afternoon, Trump himself was asked about the matter, and he claimed to have known nothing at all about it, or at least he pretended that he knew nothing at all about it.
Your reaction to the story in The Atlantic that said that some of your top cabinet officials and aides had been discussing very sensitive material through Signal, and it included an Atlantic report for that. What is your response to that?
I don't know anything about it. I'm not a big fan of The Atlantic. To me, it's a magazine that's going out of business. I think it's not much of a magazine, but I know nothing about it. You're saying that they had what?
They were using Signal to coordinate on sensitive materials.
Having to do with what? What were they talking about?
With the Houthis.
The Houthis? You mean the attack on the Houthis?
Right.
Well, it couldn't have been very effective because the attack was very effective. I can tell you that. I don't know anything about it. You're telling me about it for the first time. Anybody else?
I know nothing about it. That was Sergeant Schultz responding to reporters at the White House on Monday. He knows nothing about it. What? What is it about? Now, as luck would have it, a Senate Intelligence Committee hearing was previously scheduled for Tuesday morning, with scheduled witnesses to include, for example, Trump's Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, his CIA chief, John Ratcliffe, both of whom had accounts in that Signal group chat. While the Republicans on the committee on Tuesday chose to focus on completely different matters for some reason, Democrats were laser-focused on this Signal group chat debacle. Here, for example, is a brief exchange between Georgia's Democratic Senator John Ossoff and Trump CIA Director John Ratcliffe about the sensitivity of the information that was contained in that group chat.
And they were discussing the timing of sending U.S. air crews into enemy airspace where they faced an air defense threat, correct?
I'm going to, Senator, defer to the other principles that you're referring
Director
to
Ratcliffe,
about what the meaning and the context of what they were on.
Talking about the timing of U.S. airstrikes, correct?
Yes.
Yes, and therefore the timing of sending U.S. air crews into hostile airspace, correct?
Yes.
And therefore the time period during which enemy air defenses could target U.S. air crews flying in enemy airspace, correct?
I don't know that.
You do know that.
You do know that. Colorado's Democratic Senator Michael Bennett appeared to be enraged by all of this, particularly when he pointed out that one of the group chat participants, Steve Witkoff, Donald Trump's special envoy to the Middle East, was literally inside the Kremlin waiting to meet with Vladimir Putin as this group chat list was brought together to discuss the military operation over the Signal texting app.
Is it appropriate? Did you know that the president's Middle East advisor was in Moscow on this thread while you were, as director of the CIA, participating in this thread? Were you aware of that? Are you aware of that today?
I'm not aware of that
this
today.
This sloppiness, this incompetence, this disrespect for our intelligence agencies and the personnel who work for them is entirely unacceptable. It's an embarrassment.
Senator,
you need to do better. You need to do better.
On Monday, Politico reported that a senior administration official told them that the White House was deciding what to do about all of this, and particularly if they should cut loose National Security Advisor Mike Waltz, who apparently was the one who invited Goldberg into the group chat as some sort of damage control, with some aides floating the idea that Waltz should resign in order to prevent the president from being put in a, quote, bad position. Said the official, according to Politico, quote, it was reckless not to check who was on that thread. It was reckless to be having that conversation on Signal. You can't have recklessness as the National Security Advisor. Said journalist Marcy Wheeler in her first report on this on Monday, quote, I guess this is what we should expect from an administration led by a guy who stored nuclear documents in his bathroom. Adding, not a single one of the people involved in the thread exhibits the least competence for the job. On Tuesday, Marcy laid out, quote, 7 reasons Trump's entire national security team should resign in disgrace. Marcy Wheeler joins us next. I'm Brad Friedman, and you're listening to The Bradcast.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Bradcast.
Spies came out of the water. You're feeling so bad, 'cause you know.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. On Tuesday, our friend Marcy Wheeler laid out, quote, 7 reasons that Trump's entire national security team should resign in disgrace. That following the remarkable news on Monday that Atlantic magazine editor-in-chief Jeffrey Goldberg had been invited into a group chat on the non-secure mobile phone app called Signal with Trump's top national security cabinet members and officials and vice president to discuss highly classified attack plans carried out last week on Yemen by the Department of Defense. Joining us now is our old friend and longtime independent national security journalist Marcy Wheeler of EmptyWheel.net. She has also contributed over the years to publications like The Intercept, The Guardian, Politico, and New York Times, among others. And I will note, with affection, that Trump's defense secretary, who she describes as Whiskey Pete Hegseth, would likely describe her as a deceitful and highly discredited so-called journalist. Marcy Wheeler, welcome back to the Bradcast.
So good to be on.
Good to have you here. I want to step through some of your 7 reasons why all of the national security folks in this group chat, which would include the defense secretary, national security advisor, director of national intelligence, CIA director, among others, should, as you charge, resign in disgrace. And then we can discuss what, if anything, we learned at the Tuesday Senate Intelligence Committee hearing with Tulsi Gabbard and John Ratcliffe. So let's start with your reason number one as you laid them out. Mike Waltz, National Security Advisor, set up a signal chat to make war plans without verifying the ID of those included, meaning he didn't bother to notice that Goldberg was one of the participants?
Right. Yeah. But he also, I mean, the excuse that the administration and right-wingers were making yesterday, they've moved on to excuse number 17 by now, but the excuse they started with was, oh, it's Mike Waltz's fault, not for doing something that compromised national security, but for getting the name wrong. And it's true. That was a major screw-up, and it wasn't just that. It was also that he set up this email list, this signal list, mm-hmm. with Steve Witkoff, who's the guy who's supposed to be negotiating a peace deal with Vladimir Putin, while he was in the Kremlin, while Witkoff was in the Kremlin. And signal's pretty secure when it's in motion, meaning if I send you a text, mm-hmm. chances are good Vladimir Putin is not going to get it. But if Vladimir Putin can get into one of our phones, mm-hmm. he's going to get all that signal text. So Witkoff in the Kremlin with Putin when this list gets set up. And today, I mean, I'm jumping ahead, but a bit, mm-hmm. but Ratcliffe today said, oh, I had no idea that somebody sitting there with Putin was on this list. By the way, Tulsi was traveling around with the signal text as well to four different countries.
Would it be any safer had they been using Signal, the Signal app, like in their own home or at their office?
Well, it's just anything you do that makes it easier to compromise a phone.
Uh-huh.
And you bring a phone into Russia, they're going to compromise the phone. So anytime, anything you do to make it easier to compromise a phone, so like mm-hmm. if you don't have a secure Wi-Fi and you're using your desktop app, but sitting in the Kremlin with Vladimir Putin is really close to the top of the list of stupid things you can do with a phone if you're planning war strikes on it. So really stupid.
And
we haven't gotten to that level of the... I mean, you know, myself and other people have been talking about this, but that hasn't really started picking up steam. And it did come up in today's hearing.
Yeah.
But there needs to be some snowball effect before people really think through the implications of that.
And once you get into Witkoff's phone, you're suggesting, if you get into his phone, then it's easy sailing to everyone else that he's in touch with.
It's easy sailing to get to all the signal chat he's involved with, mm-hmm. and we should assume this is not the only signal chat that Trump is having his national security people carry out on insecure signal.
Right. Reason number two that these national security officials should resign in disgrace. The entire national security team participated in a potential violation of the Espionage Act. How so?
One of the clauses of the Espionage Act, this is the same law that Trump was charged with mm-hmm. before Aileen Cannon helped him out. Trump was charged with knowingly giving classified or national defense information that he was no longer entitled to have with retaining it after somebody asked it back. So that's E. Mm-hmm. But there's an F to it, which says, if you are so stupid as to share attack plans on a signal thread that a journalist happens to be accidentally added to, that may be criminal. The actual language is, through gross negligence, permits national defense information to be removed from its proper place of custody or delivered to anyone in violation of his trust. So in other words, Pete Hegseth shares information about this attack. Mm-hmm. with somebody not entitled to have it, which is Jeff Goldberg is not pretending he was entitled to have it.
Right.
Because Pete Hegseth is so stupid, that might get you to 18 USC 793F. And you had the entire national security establishment just sitting there watching Pete Hegseth do that.
And all of those people on that chat are able to see who else is on that chat, right?
Yeah, you have to look a bit. I mean, it's not, some make it easy, some make it harder. Goldberg wasn't responding. So there, you know, it wasn't like, who's right. the JG? It's not, but regardless, it's stupid to share attack information on a signal thread. And the reason it's stupid is because if more than one person is on it, then you don't know who's on it. And you may be sharing it with a journalist, which is exactly what happened here.
Reason number three, we played the clip earlier, but even though his
entire national security team may have committed a crime and an embarrassing story was about to break. No one apparently told Donald Trump, or so he claims. Is it even plausible, Marcy Wheeler, that he knew nothing about this before being asked about it by a reporter? And actually, if he wasn't told, does that make it any better?
No, I mean, it's not plausible, because if he hadn't been told in advance, he would be firing Susie Wiles right now. He would be firing Mike Waltz right now. He would be firing everybody, J.D. Vance. He would be firing everybody who knew this was going to come out and didn't warn him. And he hasn't fired any of them, so we have to assume he was lying when he pretended he didn't know anything about this. But if he didn't know anything about it, it means that that he can't trust anyone around him, that all the people who are running his national security just are not keeping him in the loop.
Either way, a clown show. Reason number five, we also played this clip earlier as well, but Pete Hegseth lied when he was caught on all of this, claiming that no war plans were shared with anybody on the Signal chat and that Jeff Goldberg is a hack journalist. But frankly, Marcy, shouldn't that kind of response win him a promotion in this particular administration rather than require him to resign in disgrace?
Sort of, but when you're, you know, if this does get investigated, we'll get to number seven, and the hearing. If this does get investigated, somebody who's lying to cover up that they spread classified information, we're going to learn that Pete Hegseth claims that it wasn't classified anymore, or that he's instantly declassified it. He's got some crazy Whiskey Pete theory. My favorite, though, was he has a DOD rapid response Twitter account, which he thinks helps him.
Uh-huh.
And he put his snotty answer to the journalist on Twitter on this DOD rapid response. And it got one after another Twitter correction.
Right.
A long list of them. And so it becomes this catalog of all the ways his claims are completely ridiculous.
Now, reason number six, this is a big one, it seems to me. Waltz, Mike Waltz, set the threads in this group chat to auto-delete, likely deliberately defying the Presidential Records Act. Why is that a big deal? And do you think that this is why they were using the Signal app in the first place for this conversation?
Yeah, I mean, somebody made a decision that they're going to go for convenience and auto delete, right? Over using the billions of dollars of equipment that the US government has invested in over decades to ensure that these kinds of conversations aren't accidentally shared with journalists. And since Mike Waltz set up the list, since Mike Waltz is the one who set the disappearing messages, which is what Signal calls the auto delete, we can be certain that Mike Waltz is not following the law under the Presidential Record Act, under the Federal Records Act, which requires them to keep these records. So, you know, 50 years from now, if somebody wants to go back and figure out how the attacks on Yemen got to be so crazy, we have the records. If it weren't for Goldberg, it's not clear these records exist anymore. And in fact, certainly Ratcliffe today seemed to have no ongoing record of them. I'm not sure whether Telsey kept hers or not.
I mean, we wouldn't even necessarily have to wait 50 years. If something had gone terribly wrong with that attack on Yemen and Congress decided they needed to take a look at it to figure out what happened, might these be the type of records that they might want to see? They might want to subpoena, even if they were going to look at them in a secure
something that a whistleblower looks at and says, because we actually skipped one of the reasons why this is stupid. And that reason is that on the thread, you have this moment where they're like, well, we don't really know what Trump wants to do. And somebody who's goes by SM and Goldberg assumes that Steve Miller comes on and he says, as I heard it, the president was clear, green light, but we soon start beating up Egypt and Europe because we're jerks like that. I'm synopsizing.
Yes.
This attack on Yemen was done with no war authorization. It was done entirely on presidential authorization, Article 2, right?
Right.
Granted, we're all used to that for decades of it, but it's actually very sensitive to do a war attack like that only on presidential authorization. And here in this thread, you see, I mean, Stephen Miller isn't even technically in the national security side of things. He's domestic policy. But you see this discussion of, well, we don't really know what the president wants. And Stephen Miller comes in and says, here's what he wants.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all like, oh, okay.
Okay,
and that's it. That is what stands in for presidential intent, which is the only thing that makes this even remotely legal.
And at some point, even if the president is allowed to do these attacks, doesn't he have to report within 30 days, 60 days, something like that, to Congress to explain what they did and why they did it and so forth?
Yeah. And if there's not, I mean, if something's gone haywire, or say Trump isn't sentient anymore and Stephen Miller has basically taken over, these are the kinds of threads mm-hmm. we'd need to figure out exactly what Stephen Miller was up to.
But the National Security Advisor to the president specifically set some of these comments to be disappeared in a week, or in some of them in 4 weeks. And it raises the question, what else are they using Signal to discuss? Not just this particular incident, I would assume. Everyone seemed to be, as described, pretty familiar with this app. Can we assume that they're discussing all sorts of administration business that should be kept record-wise, not on a Signal app? So that they're discussing all sorts of things on Signal that they shouldn't be?
Yeah, the three people who were asked today about their other Signal communications, Tulsi straight up said, sure, you can audit my devices for conversations I've had on Signal or I've had on any other encrypted device. We're going to find they're doing this on Telegram or something. That's what I'm sort of horrified by. Ratcliffe said,
which is even less secure than Signal.
Which is, right. Ratcliffe said, you can do it if the National Security Council approves. Kash Patel was asked, and he said, well, not to my recollection, which is what he said during his confirmation hearing when he was deliberately trying to forget stuff. So we should assume there are a great many other Signal threads.
Yikes.
Some probably including members of Congress. You know, some of these people use Signal to plan January 6th on. They discovered that it buys them 9 months to a year in the amount of time it takes to get all the records. So that's another reason to use Signal.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I would assume Tammy Duckworth today, who warned everyone what an idiot Pete Hegseth was and nobody listened to her. Today, she's like, the standard protocol in this situation is that everybody's devices get investigated, especially people like Witkoff, people like Tulsi, who were overseas and therefore quite likely to be targeted in such a situation. So Duckworth was like, yeah, we need everyone's devices and we're going to see, you know, what kind of access there's been on all of these devices. It's going to take a while for that to happen. But, you know, I would assume that we should include Kash Patel on that.
And which sort of brings us nicely to reason number 7, that you suggest that all of Trump's national security team should resign in disgrace after this incident. The entire national security team may have committed a crime in plain sight, but Pam Bondi, the attorney general, and Kash Patel, the FBI director, will not investigate it. Now, do we know that, or are we simply assuming that's the case, Marcy Wheeler?
Well, Kash was asked twice at this hearing whether FBI was going to investigate it, and he claimed that he had only been briefed on it overnight. So he claims he was the last one in D.C. to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And then later when Kash was asked, is it cool for Jeff Goldberg to go ahead and publish all these texts? Because, you know, Tulsi is sitting here saying none of it's classified. Kash was like, I wouldn't want to prejudge the legal issue, as if now he's going to investigate Goldberg rather than Pete Hegseth.
Goldberg.
If I were Goldberg, I'd be pretty cautious about releasing all of these. So I might just share them with the intelligence committee so that they can review them. As always happens, somebody on the intelligence committee can leak it to a different journalist and they can publish, and you've got clearance that way. But Goldberg should be able to publish all of these because everyone there said there's nothing classified. Pete Hegseth has said repeatedly there's nothing classified. When Trump was asked about that, he got all cagey and said, well, I'm not sure if you want to do that. We'll see. We'll see. I think that Kash Patel will be forced to give a review, but I think my suspicion is that the White House is going to try and do what Nixon did and claim, well, we're investigating it, so we can't get FBI involved until we're done investigating it. And that's what I expect, that they'll try and buy time that way. In fact, something Tulsi said this morning suggested that, for example, she refused to say whether the phone that she was traveling with, through which she was using the Signal account, she refused to say whether that was her personal phone or not, saying that the NSC is looking into it. So she stalled on that question when it should be an easy yes or no. We can probably guess, since she refused to answer it, that it was her personal phone.
Which is just astounding. We can also, can we just assume that Pam Bondi, I don't know, has she made a statement yet on it, the Attorney General Pam Bondi? I mean, the notion that Pam Bondi or Kash Patel would actually investigate all of these people is just defies the imagination that that could possibly occur. But has Bondi, to your knowledge, been specifically asked about what she intends
to
do?
Brad, she has been so busy going on Fox multiple times a day attacking Jasmine Crockett.
Yeah.
I don't think she'll even learn about this for 4 days because she's got a, you know, she's got her daily hits on Fox News to attack Jasmine Crockett.
That's true. So, finally, what, if anything, Marcy, was learned or revealed that we haven't discussed at Tuesday's Senate Intelligence Committee hearing with the witnesses, which, by the way, I suspect it would have been very difficult to get them to show up to answer questions about any of this stuff had they not already been scheduled previously for Senate Intelligence Committee hearing. But with Tulsi Gabbard, John Ratcliffe, Kash Patel, what did you learn from that hearing on Tuesday?
And there's another one tomorrow. So hopefully the House Dems, although that's less respectable I don't even know if we can call any congressional committees respectable anymore,
right.
But the Senate Intelligence Committee is more respectable than the House one, I can assure you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that one of the most surprising things was that question Ratcliffe was asked. I think it was Bennett who said, you know, did you know that Witkoff was sitting there in Russia?
You're right.
As this was, he claimed he had no idea. So that was pretty important. Tulsi admitted again that she had been traveling as well. I looked at her schedule. It was a trip to the Pacific that included Japan and, if I'm recalling correctly, Thailand and then India, because she's buddies with Modi. And then ultimately France. So in one of those three countries, Japan, Thailand, and India, she was participating in that thread. It was actually sort of interesting, and the reporting on it is a little bit sloppy. What they both did, Tulsi and Ratcliffe, is claim that their own contributions were not classified. In other words, Ratcliffe was saying, what I wrote down, the identity of that intelligence officer that I wrote down, that's not classified. And Tulsi, her contributions were actually fairly minor. And they basically said, and Tulsi was more shameless in doing this, she basically said, well, I defer to the Defense Department about whether any of the military stuff was classified. And I suspect that they both were trying to minimize the degree to which that was classified. And there was somebody, a Martin Heinrich staffer, who, when these claims were being made, was just shaking her head vigorously because she seems to know better. Like, she may have seen the text. She may have a sense of what's on the text. But they've got their cover story. We'll see whether it lasts till tomorrow, where they have to give similar testimony. I think that, the claims they made today were dodgy at best. This was a crazy thing that I discovered. Ratcliffe is a terrible person, but sitting in a hearing next to Tulsi Gabbard, he actually seemed forthright and pleasant by comparison.
Yeah, he kind of seemed normal and honest and or something. You're absolutely right. The idea, though, that even if you can, again, stretch your imagination that saying the name of a CIA official is not somehow classified, every one of the people in this a group chat, no matter what they personally said, they were all aware or should have been aware. These are our top national security officials, should have been aware of who else was in the chat, among them a journalist who, by the way, calling him a crazy quack and conspiracy theorist, whatever, that doesn't much help. Because you've let in a crazy quack conspiracy theorist journalist into your top-level group chat. But they all had access to who else was in there. They, I believe, could have known that these were set to delete, auto-delete in a week or so.
Yeah, that they would have known. I mean, Goldberg knew it. Yeah, I mean, you see that in a signal text pretty easily. There's a little sign that says auto-delete set to 4 weeks.
Which so, underscores the idea that all of these people should, in fact, as you argue, resign in disgrace. Is there any chance that anything like that can happen? And final question I'll add to it. Am I wrong, Marcy, that am I thinking that if this were a Democratic administration and the exact same thing happened, not only would there be a lot of resignations, but if there weren't, or even if there were, the GOP Republicans in Congress would spend years, and on Fox News and everywhere else, would spend years focusing on this one issue.
Obviously, they would. We'll see how long Democrats can sustain the attention on this. One thing I found interesting were a couple of the senators, Mike Ground and Indiana Senator, both said, I've got questions for the closed session on, you know, additional questions over what the Democrats, I mean, one of the most likely thing that's going to happen is Trump's advisors are going to try to use this to get rid of the people they don't like. They went after Waltz first and foremost, claiming he had some ties to Goldberg, claiming that he was a neocon. The first effort was an effort to take him out by rivals, and probably by rivals not even in the White House. I think some of what you saw, some of the testimony you saw today was sort of like, I'm going to tell you what I did, but I am not going to apologize for Hegseth. Mm-hmm. So I think you could see a backlash against Hegseth. Mm. So many, even Republicans, know he's completely unqualified. And I think they're still, these Republicans are looking for a way to rein in Trump's larger stupidity. And they actually, several of the senators did that, the Republican senators in the hearing did that on Russia today. You know, they were busy talking, challenging Trump's claims on Russia when the Democrats were doing this. And I think that this provides an opportunity to do that if Democrats can sustain it long enough for a couple more shoes to drop. Like, was Witkoff really in a meeting with Putin when that, I mean, that the timing on it is quite clear. He was in the Kremlin when that list was started. Was his phone compromised? And if so, what else was on his phone? Those are, that's to my mind, one of the most pressing questions that Democrats should be asking every minute.
It is political malpractice if they do not, it seems to me at this point. Marcy Wheeler, thanks for joining us on short notice today. She is, of course, the great, much beloved independent national security journalist. You can find her work at emptywheel.net, and you can find her on the Blue Skies at Empty Wheel as well. Thanks, Marcy. Great speaking with you. We'll be calling you soon.
All right. Take care, you guys.
You too. Okay.
Wow.
That's amazing. This is just one of those stories. What are we, 2 months in, barely? One of those stories that, you know, as I said, if this had happened to a Democratic administration, we would never hear the end of this. And in this case, I would argue, justifiably so, at least until some sort of action is taken by the administration to punish someone for this slipshoddery.
Yeah, but it seems highly unlikely. They don't appear to be, at least at this stage, the Trump administration doesn't appear to be really very interested in finding out, you know, what happened? What did folks know? Who's going to get fired for this?
Well, they don't want to find out everything that happened, but as Marcy said, you know, they might throw someone overboard like Mike Waltz or Pete Hegseth.
Yeah, but it still won't be enough. And I think you're absolutely right that Democrats, at least in Congress, have to do whatever they can to make sure that this is sustained. This is a massive national security breach, not just a scandal, not just, oh, ho, ho, look how stupid they are. This is a national security breach of extremely serious proportions. And I think we also have to consider that it won't be sustained unless the corporate media decides that, gosh, this is important enough to cover as deeply and as long as they covered Hillary's emails, for example.
Yeah, but you know what? They covered Hillary's emails because Republicans were pushing them to do it. So,
yeah.
I, you know, as critical as I often am of the corporate media, it's up to the Democrats to draw out this narrative, to make sure that the corporate mainstream media reports on it. If they stop reporting on it, I think that's a failure of the Democrats, not necessarily of the media.
Well, I think there's part of it is responsibility of the corporate media, in my mind, because they are also, you know, the fourth estate. They are responsible
to bring out
these things that are, you know, incredibly serious for national security.
Of course they should. But where they don't, it's because Democrats aren't setting up a narrative. Look, when
I
this
see.
Happens, you know, when it was Hillary's emails, right, they would call a congressional hearing and haul in Hillary Clinton for 8 hours or 11 hours or whatever it is. Now, of course, Democrats don't have majorities in either the House or the Senate, but they can hold minority hearings.
They can.
And they can make the news that forces the media to cover this issue until there are answers. We'll see, though. Maybe this will be one that the media decides to pick up all by themselves.
We'll see.
We'll see. It's clear, though, that, and I've been meaning to mention this for the past several days, that Trump just does not take national security seriously, period. If you have any doubt about that, as David Kurtz noted last week over at TPM, after sacking the governing boards of the military service academies, President Trump is now stacking those boards with a mix of people that include loyalists, conspiracists, and right-wing media figures. Among the notables at West Point, for example, he has appointed to the governing board there retired Army Lieutenant General Michael Flynn.
Mm.
If that name sounds familiar to you, he was the national security advisor, the first one in the first Trump administration, who was fired after about 8 days. So far, Mike Waltz, his current national security advisor, has he's survived
about two months.
Yeah, I don't know when he was actually sworn in, but he's made it longer than Michael Flynn. Anyway, Michael Flynn, who's a big Q conspiracy theory guy and lied about his conversations with Russia after the 2016 election and prior to taking office as national security advisor, he has just been appointed to the board at West Point, along with Steve Bannon's daughter, Maureen Bannon. So, yeah, he obviously Donald Trump takes national security very seriously. Over at the Naval Academy, former White House press secretary Sean Spicer is on the advisory board of the Naval Academy. So is Congressman Ronnie Jackson, Republican of Texas, former White House physician who was apparently handing out Adderall like candy from the White House pharmacy, at least when he wasn't drunk, or maybe when he was also drunk. Also named to the board of the Naval Academy, former Trump co-defendant Walt Nauta.
Mm.
The guy who helped him move boxes around at Mar-a-Lago of highly classified national security documents.
He's now on the board.
He's now on the board of the Naval Academy. So do you think Donald Trump actually gives a damn about national security issues? Also, over at the Air Force Academy, Donald Trump has named the dumbest U.S. senator currently serving, perhaps the dumbest U.S. senator of all time. That would be Alabama's Republican Senator Tommy Tuberville. And also on the board of the Air Force Academy, the right-wing Turning Point USA's Charlie Kirk. So the activist and podcaster Charlie Kirk now on the Air Force Academy's board of advisors.
The payoff of the grifters continues.
as does the Bradcast with Desi Doyen's Green News Report. That is straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial. Hey, this is Brad. The Bradcast survives thanks to you and your support. Please stop by bradblog.com/donate today to help us continue to do over your public airwaves what we try to do 5 days a week. That's bradblog.com/donate, and thank you.
You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast.
The story of these raging wildfires once again kicking up in the Carolinas. It's just maddening. Obviously, it's a terrible story, tragic, troubling, and all of that. But the fact that it is going on, and you're not hearing Donald Trump talk about why aren't they sweeping the forests in South Carolina for some reason.
You know why?
I don't know why. Let's discuss it in our latest Green News Report.
Countless heavy trees down. Dream conditions for wildfire to spread.
Flood-ravaged Carolinas struck by another round of wildfires as Trump pushes to dismantle FEMA.
We've been calling it a crisis for some time, and not much has been happening. The crisis is getting worse.
Melting glaciers around the world threaten water supplies for billions of people. Plus, fossil fuel industry pushing Congress to give it immunity from liability for climate damages.
Well, it's the least they could do. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Nobody should be breaking the law and blowing up Teslas, especially because if you just wait a few minutes, they'll probably do it by themselves.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, these fires in the Carolinas, boy, it sounds a whole lot like what we were dealing with here in Los Angeles just a couple of months ago. Dry and windy conditions, perfect for wildfires.
Yes, and the same thing is happening in South Korea. Over the weekend, fire weather triggered dozens of fast-moving, deadly wildfires there, also driven by extreme dryness and high winds that have so far killed at least 4 people as we go to air. Back here in the U.S., a state of emergency in the Carolinas as wildfires rage out of control again due to extreme fire weather, unusually high temperatures, strong winds, critically dry fuels, extremely low humidity, and no rainfall. It's the second outbreak of fast-spreading wildfires in just 3 weeks. The fires are hitting already damaged areas ravaged by Hurricane Helene's devastating floods last fall. Fire officials say that in western North Carolina, trees downed by Helene are providing extra fuel for the fires.
And yet, I'll bet Donald Trump doesn't withhold FEMA money from them for punishment.
Nope. South Carolina's Republican Governor Henry McMaster says FEMA approved his request for federal disaster aid. However, Donald Trump late last week signed an executive order trying to shift responsibility for disaster preparation and recovery to states and local governments, part of his goal to dismantle FEMA. Experts warn it would be counterproductive to cut off federal assistance amid the rising frequency and intensity of wildfires, hurricanes, and floods due to climate change. They say that without FEMA and federal aid, cash-strapped states would face billions of dollars in additional recovery and rebuilding costs and logistical hurdles. FEMA today responds to 4 times more disasters than it did in the 1980s.
I wonder why that is.
In 2024 alone, there was a major disaster declaration every 4 days. In other not great news, a new United Nations report warns that glaciers around the planet are disappearing faster than ever, threatening water supplies for billions of people. A 2025 UN World Water Report warns that receding snow and ice in mountain regions will have severe consequences for people and wildlife due to reduced water supplies for drinking water, crops, and heightened risk of devastating glacial lake outburst floods. Accelerating ice loss has made mountain glaciers one of the largest contributors to rising sea levels. Mountain snowpack provides nearly 60% of the world's fresh water, including for some major cities like Tokyo, Los Angeles, and New Delhi. Particularly in Asia, glaciers are critical for storing and slowly releasing water in volatile areas, and experts warn of the potential for conflict over declining water supplies. Here's Dr. John Pomeroy of the Global Water Futures Program on CBS.
We've been calling it a crisis for some time, and not much has been happening. The crisis is getting worse. We need to be able to slow this down enough so we can change how we manage water so we can keep going.
Yeah, we do. But we won't.
Finally, in politics, lobbyists for the oil and gas industry are pressuring congressional Republicans to pass new laws granting immunity to the fossil fuel industry against liability lawsuits seeking damages from the industry for the costly impacts of man-made climate change, driven primarily by the burning of fossil fuels, and for deceiving the public about it for decades. States and municipalities have brought more than 30 lawsuits accusing big oil of intentionally covering up the climate risks of their products and seeking billions in damages. The industry hopes Republicans will undercut ongoing and future climate liability lawsuits. Republicans control Congress and the White House, so they may be able to immunize the fossil fuel industry from climate liability.
Well, of course they will. That's why they paid these guys all of that money. Got them elected. Now it's payback time. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us on the social medias, especially Blue Sky at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Yeah, they're going to be cashing in, all right.
Lots of cashing in on a lot of fronts this time.
Thank you very much to our producer, Desi Doyen, to my guest today, Marcy Wheeler of Empty Wheel, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. We hope we made it worth your while. If you missed any portion of today's show or want to share it with someone you know, love, or hate, you can do so anytime for free by downloading it at bradblog.com. Every show since the beginning of time itself.
You can also,
while you're there, hey, please consider hitting a donate button to help us stay on your public airwaves. We could really use your support right now. Or you can go straight to bradblog.com/donate to do exactly that. Drop me email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, you will find me, especially at Blue Sky, at The Brad Blog. That's it. The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.